Visit InvisibleGardener.com for a magical garden.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. In the background, you have Meditational Transformational Workout, one of my latest songs. Play that one at the end of the show, you get the whole thing. On today's show, I'm going to be answering a few of your questions. So let's get going, okay? The first question, here it is. Great show. Thanks for your advice. I have installed those PVC pipes for deep warding of the fruit trees. Noticeable progress. The question goes on. It says, I know it's not organic gardening, but it is curious as to why a high percentage of oak trees are dying, especially on west-facing slopes. We live up on Mulholland Highway, and the hillsides are turning brown from dying or dead oaks. Not to mention pine trees, drought, or bark beetle. Is the drought responsible for the oaks as well, or is it disease? Any insight would be appreciated. When an entire oak turns brown, is there any chance it will come back? Oaks are usually the best when it comes to recovering after a fire, but this is very different. Pretty sad. Some of these oaks are hundreds of years old. Thanks for all your insights, Jack. I talk a lot about compost, and it's important to have a live compost, that the compost should be made with rock dust, some type of animal manure for the microbes. I used to make compost for a long time, and then I stopped. During the process, I was able to. You need to concentrate on getting a good source of compost. It's always like that farmer. You get to know a farmer, right? You know your farmer. Know where the food is coming. Well, you should know where your compost is coming from. You should find out if the compost is made with animal manure and if it's processed right in terms of no chemicals being sprayed on the manure or the animals injected. But you need to make sure that the person adds a rock dust to it. If the rock dust is not there, you're going to have to add it later on. It's best to add it during the compost process because that's the whole reason why we make compost in the first place, is to get the mineral and the bacteria together. Well, you may think it's for recycling purpose, but that's the real reason why we do compost. Then concerning your question about the oaks, many people say that oak trees don't need to get water because they're drought tolerant. Yes, they are drought tolerant because they have deep roots that tap into underground water sources. And here in Southern California, there's no underground water source anymore. That has been tapped out by us humans. And so, yes, the oak trees will die off. And I think you said something about west slope facing slope that they're going. It probably has something to do with the fog. Bugs come, lay the water down on one side of the mountain, not the other side. Maybe they'll get some they're getting some more water that way. They tend to rely then, like all the other trees, on surface water that they can get. So it's very important to provide for them. If you want to keep your oak trees, you need to provide for them a good deep watering once a month at least. Put a drip system down, 2 gallon per hour heads, and give it a good 10 hours, say once a month. I use the tree vents, which gets the water down deeper, so it allows for deeper watering. The drought does cause a lot of stress and everything, including the trees. When insects will attack any stressed out tree, usually the lack of water is one of the causes of lack of trace minerals. You need the water to transpose the trace mineral throughout the plant. So as the plant gets drier and drier, less and less trace minerals are available to the plant becomes more and more stressed out. Becomes food for the bugs. So ideally too, even if you are watering the plants, you need to provide for them that source of minerals, and you do believe it or not, need to fertilize your trees. People, I'm really surprised that people will say, let Mother Nature fertilize the trees. I don't do anything to the trees. And so if that's the approach, then fine, you let them die as they would. If Mother Nature says let it die, then it dies. But you know, if you want to help Mother Nature out, or if you want to, you know, you're taking, because we essentially are taking the place of Mother Nature in a lot of places. When we own land, we have to take care of the plants ourselves. And if you want those trees to survive, you do need to fertilize them organically, give them a good source of rock dust, compost, and mulch. Okay, so here's another question. I'm having my organic coffee this morning. Thank you for your wealth of information. You have stimulated me in an old age to try gardening. Never too late to get into gardening. So therefore, I pose two questions. What is stone dust and where can it be purchased? I went to Home Depot and was shuffled to a number of places and finally found a place where I found many 1,000-pound bags of stone and sand. About 3 or 4 years ago, now here's another question. About 3 or 4 years ago, I bought 3 climbing blossom vines, 2 white and 1 pink. After the first blooms fell off, there were no further blooms until, surprisingly, the pink vine recently started to bloom. I made no change in the care of the vines. Please explain why the pink blossoms started blooming and the others failed. And it says, also, please advise how I can nurture them so that they'll start to bloom. The first part of the question would be the rock dust. You call it stone dust. Stone dust is accurate to, you know, say. So rock dust, buying rock dust is something that I had to go through, and I still do. Basically, I go online, and there are certain places that I buy rock dust from. I order them regularly, and they ship to me. Yes, I pay for the shipping. There's a local source here in Southern California, but you still have to go to Encinitas to get it. And a lot of people don't have the time. You just order it, pay for it online, and pay for the shipping. It's worth the cost. It may only cost you $20 or $30 for 50 pounds of rock dust, but it'll cost you another $20 or $30 at least to have it shipped. But it's worth it. So I get my rock dust from a variety of different places. I get about 5 different types of rock dust. I did find one place where I can get all the rock dust from and pay for all the shipping at one time. But it's basically open to garden centers and stores for resale. It's called Down to Earth. So what you could do is you can go to the store and say, I would like rock dust. And they say, well, we don't carry rock dust. You can tell them, well, Down to Earth will sell it to you, and then you can carry it. It's called Down to Earth. You go downtoearth.com. You can even go to downtoearth.com and ask them who's buying, selling rock dust in your area. They might know. But I get 5 different types of rock dust from them. I blend it up and I turn around and use it in my business. Another source of rock dust is called Peaceful Valley Farm and Garden Supply in Northern California. They sell rock dust. You can type rock dust into the search engine, or you can go to my website, visiblegardener.com. And look up rock dust. You'll see a source of rock dust, all the different places of rock dust. It takes you back to remineralization.org, which is a provides you various different sources of rock dust throughout the world. Okay, so and then the other question is about the vines. Didn't pretty much you didn't tell me what they are, the name of it. It's always good to know what the name of the plant is. Reclimbing blossom vines could be anything. What I would need, I need to know a lot more than that, but because I can't really tell why. Offhand, I would say that if they were planted near, well, first of all, you don't know. I don't know if they were right next to each other. They could be in different parts of your property, right? You have to see what's planted next to it or close to it. If it's one of them was planted, they're planted near a lawn, the high nitrogen fertilizer will stop the blooming. Simple as that. So it just depends. I have a feeling that the one that's blooming is further away from any sources of high nitrogen fertilizer than the other ones. And in terms of what would make them bloom and make them do well, there are, you can treat them like roses. Roses have a certain type of organic fertilizer that they have, not high in nitrogen, because again, you want them to bloom. You can treat them like you do. You can feed them the same stuff you feed the tomato plants. They're even though those are a little bit higher nitrogen than the roses, like there's the same principle. Too high nitrogen doesn't bloom, no fruit. So the tomato plants will be work too. What I use is a variety of different things for to make plants bloom, but the main thing I use to make my plants bloom is called super seaweed. Just super seaweed by itself. The microbiological activator. I invented it. It has all the different types of rock dust in it in a liquid form. It has different types of liquid seaweed, which I'm no longer buying, so I'm using the source I have left because of the radiation, and eventually it won't be called super seaweed anymore. I would use the super seaweed, and it would definitely make your plants bloom more. I would incorporate rock dust into the soil. I would learn to use compost. All essential to helping the plants bloom. Automatically takes you to my website, invisiblegardener.com, which you can find all kinds of stuff there. I have my ebooks, I sell membership, and all kinds of. on today's show, we're going to be talking about is the trees. We're going to be covering rodenticide use in local parks. Question, rodents in my vegetable garden. Also, we have another question about ants called Ants Gets No Respect. Okay, so in the magazine Nature, there was a recent study published by the Yale School of Forestry and Environmental Studies, and they came out with the idea, with the study said that there was 3 trillion trees on Earth, approximately 400 trees for every person. The study says that, and while that may seem like a lot, scientists say that before humans began clearing forests, the Earth was home to nearly twice as many trees. The number of trees cut down is almost 3 trillion since the start of the human civilization. That's an astronomical figure. And it's hard to explain, but basically I've been saying for years, I say it's the trees. And when we talked about climate, I talk about climate change, and I talk about environment. Always comes back to the trees. So yes, we've cut down half of the world's forest. At the same time, we have increased carbon in the air. Now, what do trees do? They take carbon dioxide and give out oxygen. So we have been removing the one thing that removes carbon dioxide, oxygen carbon dioxide from the air and gives us oxygen while increasing the carbon dioxide and other gases. Because what people are doing is they're cutting down the forest to grow cattle, millions and millions of cattle, which, you know, poo-poo methane increases the climate gases in the air again. So we need to understand that the trees are the human activity came out as the strongest control on tree density across the whole biomes. It's really one of those environmental barriers that we shouldn't cross. Some scientists are saying we already crossed it in the sense that we've cut down half of the world's population of trees. And so if we cut any more trees down, we're going to get in deeper doo-doo because we're going to have more and more carbon dioxide, and less control of the atmosphere, because that's how but one of the things trees do is they're a shock absorber. They help to balance out the environment. They help to control the weather to a great degree. So that's basically a study of trees, and we want to increase the trees. I tell people we need to have a forest cover. Every city should have a 60% minimum forest cover. I think L.A. is lucky if it has 20-25% forest cover. And the trees are being cut down at a very, very large, alarming rate on a daily basis to continue this. So that's no good, right? Okay. That's the topic about is the trees. Okay. So next topic is rodenticide use. So it basically has to do with gophers on baseball, football fields here in a local high school, it says you may have noticed an issue with gophers and squirrels, including some dangerous holes in some of the fields. So that's what's happening, is the gophers are making holes everywhere and people are walking into them, horses, dogs, whatever, and hurting themselves. But that's not the worst part. The worst part is they're using a toxic poison to kill them with, which also kills every other pest around that's stupid enough to eat it. So wild animals will eat it, birds will eat them, and they'll die. So this person says he was extremely disturbed that those beliefs were and we find ourselves in a situation where our responsibilities for our kids require prompt, strong action, but that strong action exceeds my tolerance for the use of toxic pesticides. So they're having, it's a constant thing that they're talking about, you know, what we should stop using and what should we do in this place. And one person says it's very frustrating to deal with the school district and the uses of some of the items they're accustomed to using elsewhere. I think this should be another reason for people to sign the petition to get onto a different school district which does not use pesticides. This person said we should use traps. Traps work really well. I find them in my yard and I use traps. I take care of the gopher problem. You don't need to use poison. Well, here's something else that I like to throw into the thing. Yeah, traps work, but what works really good without poison is called the underground exterminator. It costs you about $20 at your local hardware store. It's a little device you hook up to your exhaust system. You hook up a good hose, not a cheap plastic hose, get a little melt. You want a good rubber hose. You hook up to your exhaust system, you put the hose down into the gopher tunnel, and you run your car for about a half hour. It kills all the gopher peacefully without the use of any poisons. Any animal can come afterwards and eat them and won't bother them at all. So that would be my recommendation, and I'm going to be writing a column on it next week about this as I write a column. So use the underground exterminator to control your gophers, and you'll be glad you did. Eventually, see, when the gopher dies in the tunnel, no other gopher goes in there. After a few gophers dying in those area, in your area, they will not be going in there. And of course, I always mention about planting a paper white narcissus as a border. You just have to be careful. We have real young kids, not for them to eat it or get it in their eyes. And usually, animals won't eat it either. Okay, so that's the rodenticide use. Now, I also have another question. Love your show. I can't get a handle on the rodent problem I'm having. I have two raised beds, each about 5 by 30 feet, 5 by 30 feet, that's not a nice length, in which I plant vegetables, changing crops as the season warrants. They're contained in a small backyard surrounded by a 12-foot fence. The first year I planted, I had nothing but success. Tons of lettuce, spinach, tomatoes, onions, peppers, and a euphoric victory. I guess it was happy. Then last year, it says everything I write to pick gone. Everything got taken by what we finally figured out was nighttime raiding rats. We thought we finally got rid of the buggers last year, winter, but this summer season, same thing. Fruit ripe for the picking and then overnight gone. This time, we saw mice. I ate the snap traps with which we had limited success, and now we've been talked into bait boxes, which I didn't want to do. But I can't even grow flowers anymore. Everything becomes a buffet for these rodents. More motion sensor lights, motion sensor watering, no luck. Any ideas? We have pets, so we need to be careful. Okay, so this is my response to this person. Her name is Nancy. Nanci, by the way, it says CY is a nice name. Most folks everywhere that live in the country are having the same problem. All animals are stressed out by the drought. The food and water sources are becoming more and more scarce, and they have no choice but to look to us humans to find water and food. I would not kill any animals or insect. So the solution is rather simple. You just have to enclose your garden. So you can either enclose the whole backyard. You have a backyard area. You can just put a fenced area that goes down maybe a foot. It goes up a few feet, maybe 6 feet, 7 feet, 8 foot tall, or 10 foot if you have your fruit trees in there. You can enclose the vegetable garden area if you just wanted to do that area. Or you can just enclose the raised bed area. You can build up from the sides, have it fenced in. You can have a little gateway you can get in and out with. Totally enclose it, and the animals can't get at it. Grow inside the greenhouses, the animals can't get at it. So that's it for the rhododendron side. And now we have, go to ants. Okay, so Andy, I love your show. I have, the other day I was watering our two passion fruit vines. Afterwards, I noticed a lot of ants near the base of the stalk. It almost seemed like they were pouring out of the soil. Any ideas, treatments? So I have received a lot of emails and questions about this very same problem, but it's just different plants. So it is important to understand that ants are an important link in life, okay? Break that link, it would be very bad for us. Ants play a very important role in the regulation of other insects as well as act as Mother Nature's custodians. What we must do as good gardeners of the earth is to realize their value and act with respect. The other day, a person told me that we'd better to kill all the ants on the planet. I tried to explain to him what would be impossible, and that more than likely, it would be ants that would be here long after us humans are gone. Okay, so here's the problem. The best one can do with ants is to keep their population down and to make less of what we grow a food source for them. Problem here is that due to the drought, the ants have found not only a source of food for them, but also a source of water. It will ensure their survival during drought periods. While we cannot stop watering our property, we can start controlling the ant population. There are two ways that I know of to control ant populations that do not include the spraying of fill in the blank to kill them. In my last column on ants, I mentioned that I hate to kill all ants or any other creature. But sometimes you have to, and so I will tell you how to keep the ant population down. First off, you can use a boric acid ant bait. The best and easy one to locate is called Taro. They sell it almost any nursery. T-E-R-R-O. The ants take the boric acid bait back to their colony, and the boric acid will eventually kill the queen, the workers, and eventually reduce her population until they make another queen. You need to take these ant baits near where you have seen the ants, say under that plant in question. It should be replaced weekly. Another solution is to use spinosad. Spinosad is derived from the fermentation of a naturally occurring soil bacteria. This product is called Bullseye, and it's sold as an ant bait. The ant takes the bait back solution back to the colony where it's fed to other ants, including the queen. It will affect the entire colony within a few weeks. Just remember that when you remove an ant colony, another ant colony will take its place. So this is where this will have to be done year-round. I would alternate between the taro and the bullseye for best results. Bullseye ant bait is sold through Gardens Alive. So you go to gardensalive.com and buy it from them. In the long run, it's best to keep the water below ground, keep the plants healthy so the ants won't see it as a food source, keep your house clean so the ants won't see that as a food source. For me, I find I do not need to reduce population, but simply to increase the health of plants, increasing microbiology of the soil. The more microorganisms in the soil, the fewer ants will be able to populate.
Hello, everybody. This is Andy Lopez, and you're listening to Don't Panic, It's Organic. On today's show, we're talking about the integrated organic natural program for the control and prevention of the Polysaccharis shot-o borer. We're also going to talk a little bit about the website, talk about things that are coming up in the future, talk a little bit about the contest. So don't go away, we'll be right back.
Attention gardeners, how would you like to learn how to get rid of unwanted pests like ants and mosquitoes without using harmful pesticides? With the growing concern about West Nile virus, killer bees, and the use of synthetic pesticides, there is a better way. Go to www.invisiblegardener.com. Andy Lopez, the Invisible Gardener, provides alternatives to chemical products using natural ingredients you may already have at home. Do you have gardening questions or problems? Get the help you need at www.invisiblegardener.com. Join the Invisible Gardeners of America and take their online gardening classes. The Invisible Gardener has helped gardeners since 1972, and he can help you too. Visit www.invisiblegardener.com.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the Polysaccharis shot hole borer. Some of you may know about it, most of you won't know about it, but it's basically, you know, there are many different types of pests that are attacking plants now, trees and so forth, and they what they're doing is they're bringing along their disease with them, okay? So this particular one, it bores a tunnel into the tree it selects, spits out the bark, it doesn't eat it, and injects into the tunnel from several different types of species that it then grows as food for its children. It lays the eggs there. When children are born, they eat the nutrient-rich fungus. And the process starts all over again. The pest is different in that it uses a fungus to feed its children and does not eat the actual tree itself. So some of the problems that it does, you know, of course, is doing tunnels through the tree, weakens the structure of the tree, falls apart, and the fungus affects the whole tree and weakens the tree, and it also dies from the infection, so to speak. Okay, so why does the borer, or any other pest for that matter, choose that particular tree to become the nursery for its children? What makes the mother say, ah, this is the place, or ah, this is not the right place? So the first place one should look at is not the tree, but the soil that the tree is growing in. As you know, I do a radio show, and one of the shows is called It's Alive. This show is all about the living soil and the benefits it provides to everything that grows on it. The soil is alive with millions of microbes that each has a particular job to do. If these organisms are missing, or any one organism is missing, then their job or jobs do not get done. Many microbes, all that they do is eat and poop. Doesn't sound like a big important job, but it is.
But the microbes eat is the trace minerals needed by the plants. But plants need the minerals in a particular soluble form. This is the poop of the microbes, which are absorbed into the tree. That's another job microbes, mycorrhiza, fungi, to the root hairs of the trees do. The soil food web is like the internet for the earth, in that it is all connected. The living organisms in the soil each provides benefits to the plant, while in turn it gets benefit from the plant. So, when the soil web is destroyed, the microbes and the microbiology dies and or is changed, and the good work is no longer being done. Chemical fertilizers, while they provide some nutrients, they do not provide all the nutrients in the proper form. They also damage the soil by killing beneficial microbes to provide the necessary microorganisms. They provide immunity to the plants. They provide essential support that the plants have evolved to use. High nitrogen is bad for plants and trees, believe it or not. High nitrogen inhibits the absorption of minerals by its destruction of soil microbes. Remember, chemical fertilizers are salts. This salt kills all living things, and in its place, the bad guys will move in and take its place. That's why the diseases start in the soil. High nitrogen will cause rapid growth, which is weakened minerals high in simple carbohydrates. This growth is a soft, lush, and easily eaten by sucking and chewing pests. Many of these pests bring with them various diseases, which also find the weakened plant an attractive and irresistible food source. Using a refractometer, which I talk a lot about, you can chart the brick level of any plant, tree, vegetable, lawn, rose, etc. You will see the bricks rise whenever any type of fertilization is done. If you use a high nitrogen chemically based fertilizer, you will see a big jump in the bricks level of the plant. If you chart the bricks level over the coming week, and if you're not applying any more of the fertilizer, you will see that the bricks level of the plants will eventually drop lower than it was before, like eating sugar and having a hangover afterwards. While on the other hand, if you were to use a good organic fertilizer based on good organic practices, ORMI approved, one that has benefits microbes, essential minerals in the form of rock dust, compost properly made, low nitrogen, then you will see that the plant's brick level not only rise, but they will also not drop below the original level, but will settle down a few points above the original level. Many conditions will cause the bricks level to rise and fall. Seasonal forces exert a big control over bricks level, and therefore over nutritional levels of the plant. This ranges from soil temperatures to light conditions, from the sun to the genetics of the plant. The goal here is to first to understand what the correct bricks a particular tree or plant should have, and then work to allow the tree to achieve that level, and taking into account the time of year, what the correct bricks should be at that moment. Once the correct bricks level is reached, the tree in question, whether it's a sycamore or an avocado, will be able to withstand any attacks from pests and diseases. It does this because of the following rule I have developed over many years I've been in business. The higher the bricks, the less the pest and disease. The higher the bricks, the more complex carbohydrates you will have. High nitrogen temporarily raises bricks level, especially fertilizer also has a broad range of micronutrients besides NPK. Some actually have a broad range of minerals. These fertilizers will work on a short-term basis, but they are not suitable for sustainable practices over time. Using chemical fertilizer, while it causes rapid growth, it also temporarily raises bricks level, but what it really does is causes the tree to produce more simple carbohydrates instead of the complex carbohydrates. This makes the tree a perfect environment for pests and diseases. Actually, it's perfect food, right, for the pest. To effectively raise bricks levels of a tree, one must first provide a solid foundation, living soil. If the soil is at a proper pH level, the microbes we want, along with the fungi we want, only live in a small pH range of 6.5 to 6.8. Above or below this range, you will find some microbes, but not as much as in the proper range. Compost is not a good fungi environment until the microbes have exhausted themselves on their nutrients, and then the pH will drop, and this will allow the proper microbes or fungi to grow. The compost should then be inoculated with the proper fungi and microbes. In the case of the shot hole borer, several conditions are different than other types of borers. First of all, the insect does not eat through the bark, but spits it out. Secondly, the pests farm certain species of fungi, which they have developed over the years, that they can eat as a food source for their children. It's a combination of two that makes the chemical control tough. The pests are well protected within the tunnels they build. The tunnels themselves are an important factor in damaging the tree branches and support system of the tree, as I mentioned before. So the key here is another rule I've developed. If the pest does not attack the tree will not get disease and spreads. The exception to this rule and many other rules I have developed is humans. They don't work within any perimeter of logic. They usually spread the disease by not cleaning their tools. The key to prevention is healthy soil. The organic system works on the principle that healthy soil equals healthy plants. Next time, I will go into the details on the different systems available that you can use. I will be covering compost tea and why it is so important. If you have any questions, you can email me at andylopez@invisiblegardener.com. If you're a member, you can, when you read this column, they will send you to a forum that you can ask questions about. Just go to the forum and look for the pest control forum, and you can ask a question about the shot hole borer. So the newsletter is the most important thing, because the newsletter tells you when a radio show comes out. It shows you the articles, tells you where you can go to ask questions about that particular article or that radio show. It tells you about the Invisible Gardener TV. It basically gives you a way to access everything. So you can always go to the website and cruise around it and figure it out for yourself. Invisible Gardener blog is where I do the column. Invisible Gardener TV, I do a weekly TV show. I also do a Invisible Gardener radio show. All of them up there on the website, Invisible Gardener forum. So the newsletter is important. If you're getting the radio show and you're not getting the newsletter, please email me, because I'll help you. I also have a feeling that you're not getting access to the website. So if you listen to the radio show and you want to of those members that were on before we moved here, and they were getting the radio show through the email, and you just continued to do that, and you haven't been able to register or even try to register, because mainly the newsletter that I sent out, it's Constant Contact. You didn't sign up for it, but because you're a member, I have your email and your mailing list, I put you on Constant Contact and send it to you and let you know that this is the new website. And as a lifetime member, I have a link that I'll and send it to you and let you know that this is the new website. And as a lifetime member, I have a link that allows you to get back in without having to pay for anything. And you look us up there. The website is an amazing website, and it actually works. So I have that available for you. So if you're listening to the radio show and you're not getting the newsletter, then I know that you did also not sign up for, you know, to get the membership upgrade. You send me an email, andylopez@invisiblegardener.com. If a member has a question in the subject so he doesn't disappear, I'll help you get plugged into Invisible Gardener membership again. If you're not a member and you're getting the radio show, then you're probably either subscribed to the radio show. You can subscribe for it at 99 cents a month. You get all my radio shows when they come out once a week, once a month. They're all different. I have four different radio shows that come out differently. Members one comes out every week, or the subscribe one like this one comes out every week. Occasionally this one will get posted on the free general public site. That's once a month. And if you're getting any of these things, you should be getting them through the newsletter. The newsletter will come in the email. They'll say, this is today's radio show. It takes you to the website where the radio show would be. Okay, so That's basically it. I'm also setting up a members page on the website, so you have to be able to log in to be a member. So that means you already made it through the process. You're a member, you're just not sure how to access everything. The page will show you how to get the radio show, tell you, make sure that you're getting you're as a member, you're already getting the newsletter and contest, anything like that, any help that you're having a problem, password, stuff like that. There's also a tech page, so it allows people who are not able to get in. So if you want to sign up as a member, a few of you have tried to sign in as a member, are having problems with the website, say the website doesn't work. It does work. You just have to follow instructions, so I understand. I'm more than happy to help you through it. So you can always call me here at the office during office hours, and I would be more than happy to help you straighten out the memberships so that you can get in there and use it.
So the first thing I'm going to do is it's an article I just wrote about 5 minutes ago. It's an article, I guess you'd call it. I usually just do every Friday. I have a column, which I do every Friday. The column I'll be reading afterwards, so that's the one we're talking about slope control during the winter rains. But this one here, I just wrote this, and it's a follow through on the column that I wrote. The article that I wrote called 10 Ways to Kill All Living Beings on the Planet Within 100 Years. I changed it to 50 years because I'm trying to be optimistic here, okay? And then past few days, I've seen a couple of different things on TV and been reading through it. But one particular one was about a scientist who gives us 15 years. So I started looking into what other scientists are saying, and yeah, they're saying 15, 20 years. And what they're talking about is exactly what I talked about in the 10 Ways to Kill All Living Beings. And you should read that. I'm not going to cover that one. But here's the article that I wrote, and I'll read it to you. You get to hear it first here, okay? There are scientists that are saying that all life on Earth will end in about 15 years. My article, which I call How to Kill All Living Beings Within the Next 50 Years, is basically the very same thing. I originally was going to say we can kill all living beings on Earth within the next 10 years, but being an optimist, I gave life on Earth 50 years. I can see that pushing it and understanding, I can see that is pushing it and understanding why some scientists are looking at the facts and they are arriving at 15 years for life as we know it to end on Earth. I do admit that 15 years is also pushing it. I think it could be as little as 5 years. That we as humans had, and that we as humans had better wake up and start making plans to leave Earth and infect other planets. Oops, did I say infect? If I were a living Earth, I would consider humans as an infection that has spread to the brain and must be removed. Fortunately, the Earth would be around for a long time, and who knows, given enough time, even radioactive isotopes become harmless to life, and then maybe something will start. In my 10 Ways to Kill All Living Beings, I cover the 10 eco barriers that we must not cross, and how, in fact, we have already crossed all of them, and that it is only a matter of time now. These eco barriers are logical barriers that we as good gardeners of the earth should automatically know not to break. Things like clean water, clean air, clean food are no-brainer. Things like radiation, pollution of the soil, humans, ocean, air, electromagnetic pollution, pesticide pollution should also be a no-brainer. So now we find ourselves out on a limb, not only cutting the branch we are sitting on, but also the whole tree and everything else living on it. So now, why am I writing this? Yes, it did help that scientists are saying something about the end, but they're not saying that we should stop eating GEO foods. GEO is a branch of GMO, and it's a branch that adds chemicals to the genes of the food we eat. They have gotten away with saying that it's safe. Actually, what they're saying is that GMOs are safe, and is evident by their use for centuries. They are correct in one part of the statement, as long as they do not mention the fact that these are GEO and have only recently been developed. These guys want you to believe that GEO is the same as GMO and that therefore as safe. Recently in the newspaper, I read an article about Big Sugar and corn syrup, makers of HFC, high fructose corn syrup, are in court, each saying that their product is safe. The high sugar folks have it right about how bad HFCS, high fructose corn syrup, are, while the corn syrup folks are not saying sugar is bad, but that the sugar folks are wrong in saying that HFCs are bad. So here's the important part. Both are bad. But HFCs are worse. Why? Because what the HFCS folks do not tell you is that it is all GEO made from Roundup Ready corn. They also do not tell you that they have a newer, more concentrated form of HFCS, which they have changed the name to confuse us, called HFCS-90. This is a type of corn syrup. This type of corn syrup will have 90% high fructose, while their normal variety was 40%. And it will no longer state on the label that it says high fructose corn syrup. It will just merely say fructose or fructose syrup. Remember, all of it is GEO from Roundup Ready corn, and soon it's going to be 2,4-D and whatever else they're selling it to other companies to get away with. Some folks are saying it is safe, while others are not. I do not wish to be a guinea pig, only to find out later. Oops. Please note, we are the only country in the world that allows GEO foods. The insects, animals, birds, and bees are also being affected. So 15 years? Maybe not even that. Okay. So we'll move on to the next part. Okay, so I want to add something that when I listened to it, I didn't quite make myself clear about it. Okay, so I'm talking about scientists who are saying that we're gonna, all die in 15 years. From what I hear, they're basically talking about climate change and the fact that we're gonna run out of water. I don't hear them saying anything about any of these other things that I'm talking about. I do hear scientists. There are some scientists that say GEOs are perfectly safe because it's in the genes. It's not going to affect you. All this kind of stuff, right? And it's not going to do anything to your body, or it's not going to do anything to the environment. Then there are scientists who say the opposite. This is not good. It's not good for the environment. It's not good for you to be eating putting a chemical into your body. You have no idea what it does to your generation or the next generation or the generation after that. You're fooling around with the genes. You're doing something that was not done in nature. So they're always scientists on one end or the other end. So It depends who you want. Who do you want to listen to? And so, some degree, the scientists are right in the sense that, you know, it's a scientific method of expanding and utilizing the technology. But at the same time, I don't believe that we were ever meant to have chemicals like Roundup and pesticides in the gene. I do not believe that it is safe, even though right now there hasn't been any outbreak of anything connected to it yet, but there will be. And then they're going to say, oh, sorry, I guess you're right. So anyway, I just wanted to go over that, make sure that everybody understands that. So this one here is slope control during winter rains. Okay, so this coming El Nino is going to produce some heavy rains on and off. It already has produced a variety of different rain conditions in different areas here in Southern California. And as the weather, as the winter comes along, January, February should be. Heavy rains period, especially up and down California, because El Nino is going to go further north than usual, which is good in one level. Plus, it's going to produce a lot of snow. It already has produced a good amount of snow, and it's going to be producing more snow. It's going to help a little bit. One of the interesting things that people need to understand about climate change is that it's a swinging thing. What we're doing is there's a normal swinging pattern that the pendulum goes back and forth. For climate change, this is how normally it happens in nature, right? We do get winter, spring, summer, and fall, which is a smaller climate change. And then we get bigger climate change, which usually means ice age, cold age, ice age, warming age, right? Usually those are natural cycles and a whole bunch of long-term cycles. And so what we have done is that we speeded up that cycle of the, so we're now going into a warming period, and it's not going to be for a year, it's not going to be for 10 years. The last warming period was 500 years, followed by almost 500 years ice age. It's called the Little Ice Age and the Medieval Warming Period. That only happened because we cut down most of Europe's forest. So imagine what we're doing now. We're doing everything the opposite. We have another show. I have another show called "It's the Trees." Yeah, it's the trees. We need more trees to suck in the carbon dioxide. So we're cutting the trees down while producing more carbon dioxide. Figure it out. Anyway, so that's what it means. What I want to say is that so you're not going to go into a simple period of just no water, no drought, nothing. We're still going to go through the winter, spring, summer, and fall, but they're going to be some of them will be really extreme. The more water you have, the more rain, the warmer it gets, the more moisture in the air, the more water you have in the air. And eventually, the more water you have in the air, the colder eventually you're going to have your wintertime because there's more water to freeze. Figure it out. So eventually, you're going to be hot times, cold times, a bunch of hot times, and followed by a bunch of more cold times. And then hot times for a while, then be cold for a long time, then hot and then colder for a long time. Eventually, be cold all the time. That's why it's called an ice age. It's cold all the time. Eventually, the weather patterns settle down. It really, and I explained it before why the ice age and cold age come about in sense of the Gulf Stream, how the hotter it gets, the more it melts the ice age, the glaciers, which is fresh water, how that gets dumped in the Gulf Stream and how it changes the Gulf Stream, the cycle of the Gulf Stream, because usually it's salt water, and salt water sinks when it's cold and rises when it's hot. Fresh water does not do that. You pump fresh water in, you no longer have the cycle. You no longer have the seasons. Eventually, that'll come back again. Okay. All right. So for now, what will happen is you're going to be getting places on Earth that it's going to be wetter than usual, and other places will be colder than usual, and other places will be hotter than usual. It may even change around. The cycles, the pattern in the atmosphere will change, just like El Nino is heating up the Earth to such a degree that there's a certain belt that's expanding further north than ever before, and the hurricanes and the storms all follow it. And eventually that more water in the air produces colder environment. So eventually you end up with more ice. And there could be periods of really heavy winters. So anyway, we're going to get some rain, and the rain's going to come because there's a variety of other things that'll cause it to happen. Okay, so what we need to do now is, learn to deal with it. And that's another long, long subject of what is that we should be doing. I tell people we are told to save a drop, or we're wasting millions and millions of gallons of water. So that doesn't sound right, does it? So anyway, this coming, being practical right now, talking about right now, coming up this winter, we're going to be getting a bunch of rain. And a lot of people have been told to cut back on their watering, and because of that, their slope, and then also because it hasn't been much rain, they don't have nothing much growing on their slopes. And when it rains, you have slopes, you get the water running down, you get mud running down, all kinds of problems. So here in Malibu, the ideal scenario is to, because you can do California natives, that's really cool. Or you can do, there's a really cool ground cover that's just been developed specifically to use 90% less water. Root systems go down 10 feet, and it produces flowers during the spring and summertime. It's called Carapia. And I will have one of the folks that sells it here in Southern California on sometime in the next month or two to talk about it. I like to get him on soon because, as I said, you need to do something fast if you have a slope and you don't have anything covering, because you can't do seeds. Putting seeds down will just wash away. It takes months, a good month or two or three, to get the seeds established. And so what's really cool about this particular company here in Southern California is that they sell the ground cover, these two types of ground covers, in a sod form. So, you're used to buying, grass sod, Marathon or whatever sod, right? Well, now you can buy it in a native grass. It's called bent grass, which is really nice. It's a really good-looking grass. It's called bent grass, or you can get it, which is a native, which is a California native. And I'm sure that, probably in your city, if you're in a different state, you can look it up and see if anybody's selling natives there in a sod form. But if you're here in Southern California and in Malibu, this is a very good deal for you, because if you you mend the soil, you lay down, what I would do is mend the soil, put a drip system down, and don't do like this one guy did. He put a drip system like every foot. Remember, it's on a slope, so a drip on top, you give yourself about 2 feet, and then you do another line, 2 feet, maybe even 3 feet might be good. It depends on the slope. But once you get, so you have a drip line, you mend the soil, you put the drip line down, and then you put the sod down. Ideally, you have to do a little bit of overhead watering until it gets established. Just a little bit of overhead watering. You can have one of the two sprinkler heads on, or you can have them with a valve, or you can go there and have your gardener hand watered once or twice a day for about a week, and then after that.
Okay, everybody. See you again next week.